Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group, NCA, in Zuchus of Rivka Bela, Bas Nechama Shifra, and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to be learning on the topic of cleanliness in holy places. This is in Siman Hay, the fifth chapter in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and we're going to break this into two parts. The first part today is going to be two concepts. Concept number one is what is considered unclean in halacha, and number two is the areas that are affected by this. When we get to part two, we will discuss as other places that are considered unclean and laws of nakedness and saying matters of holiness in that presence. Let's start at the beginning. The basic concept is, again, as we've been seeing, is that Hashem, the Almighty, is found in all places, and therefore He expects us to behave in a way that reflects that. This is actually expressed in Devarim Perek Chav Gimel, where it describes a war camp. A war camp is often times where there is a lot of change, where there's a lot of pressure, and perhaps things like this, like even how one goes to the restroom or how one treats one camp, may be deprioritized. But yet, in that same place, Hashem tells us that by standard procedure, it should be V'yasei Tiyeh El Azeinecha, that a person should have a peg, something used to dig, in order that a soldier who's out in the field should dig a hole to make use of the restroom. They should not just defecate in the field, they should cover up their excrement. And the reason the Torah tells us is Ki Hashem lakecha misalech bekerav ma'achanecha latzilcha. Hashem is walking among your camp to save you. V'loseis oivecha lefonecha, and to place your enemies in front of you. V'yom ma'achanecha kodosh. And therefore, your camp should be a holy place. Therefore, there's an expectation, even in such circumstances, to treat one's surroundings respectfully, to behave in a way that is befitting a person who bears the name of the Almighty. And if that's true in a war camp, it is most certainly true in one's own home and the way one relates to things. A lot of things have become a little easier today because of piping and sewage and so on. However, these things come up surprisingly often. Let's jump straight into 12 questions on this topic. Number one is, what if there is urine in a place one wants to pray? This sometimes happens that a child will urinate on the floor, or if, let's say, one is in a camp with special needs, there might be those who might just urinate, or one finds urine, one doesn't know, it's a questionable pool on the floor, what should one do? So the halacha is that if there's urine on the floor, one needs to dilute it if one's not able to wipe it up. So one needs to put a reveres of water, that is around 3.3 fluid ounces, into that to dilute it, and therefore then it would be all right. If there are two urines, then obviously two cups would be needed. Question number three, what if it was absorbed into the ground or the clothing? Does one still need to dilute it? The answer is yes. As long as it's still damp, then it requires dilution. Number four, what if there is feces on one's skin, but it's covered by one's clothing? In that case, it would be a problem to daven, and certainly in the area around the anus, one is not allowed to daven if there is feces on one's body when one is trying to pray. What about a discharge of blood? Sometimes people discharge blood, so the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch points out that it may depend on where the wound is. If it is in the anal cavity, so let's say some sort of hemorrhoids or something like that, less consequential than if it's further up as well. Number six, what if there might be urine or feces in certain locations? So we don't know, but we get to some place and maybe. And the answer is, in that case, one should not pray until the area is checked. One's not allowed to pray in such an area. What if the one is in the room below a room in which there is feces or urine? So let's say there is some sort of room which is upstairs, which is where people use to go to the bathroom. So in that case, one should not daven in such a room. What is interesting is that sometimes in today's buildings, and certainly in the cities, and where one's not able to build outwards, one has to build upwards, there are situations where there may be restrooms in rooms which are higher than the actual sanctuary of the shul. Part of the reason why this is less consequential today is because we're not talking about the types of outhouses or facilities that in those days where we have piping, and when anything is used, when the bathroom is used, it is flushed away, so it makes it less consequential in this respect. What about the urine or feces of babies? So certainly when a baby starts eating solids, so whether it's 4 months, 6 months, or whenever that is, and therefore that changes the consistency of their feces, that is certainly a concern. However, the Kitzur suggests that it's best to avoid feces even from an infant as well. If it is urine and it's completely absorbed in the diaper, less of a problem as well. What happens if it's not a child's feces, but let's say it is feces, but it doesn't smell? There's no smell to it. That is still a problem, even if there's no smell as well. It's not just about the smell. What about the feces of animals? So there's dung, which is around. Someone's going for a hike, and there happens to be dung from animals or birds around. So that is still a problem. One cannot daven in that area as well. What about other smells? Are there any other smells which are not actually dung or feces which are a problem? The answer is yes. Bad smells also would prevent one from praying. So if one's in an area that in the old days it used to be like tanneries had terrible smells, but there's certain areas where they're just bad smells. One is not allowed to pray. One is not allowed to daven in those situations as well. What about hardened or frozen feces? If it's hardened and there's no moisture at all, so it just crumbles, then that's not an issue. If it's frozen, it is a problem because it's still in a solid state, but just it is at this point in time frozen. And if it's covered by snow, that's considered a sufficient cover as well. We're going to look at the second concept now, and the second concept is the areas that are affected by this as well. So there's certain areas which by nature are affected. So a few basic questions that we can deal with. 8 questions. Number one is, when it comes to this, how far must one distance oneself from feces? So we don't, urine can be diluted. Feces cannot be diluted. How far must one distance oneself? So one cannot pray in front of one. And one should be machmer on the front diagonal sides as well. But if it's behind one or out of one's natural vision, it needs to be 4 amos, that's 4 cubits, from the end of that smell. So that means to say where the smell would have ended, you measure 4 amos from that area, and you take it from there as well. Okay, what about in the situation where it has no smell? Then you only do 4 amos, 4 cubits from the end of where the feces itself is. What happens if there's feces in a shul, God forbid? Then in that case, one cannot pray until it is removed or covered, since there will certainly be somebody there, even though technically speaking, the Baal Tefillah or people are going to, at this point in time, are not within 4 amos of it. But in a shul, it's more concerning because then there is going to be somebody who's going to end up praying near it as well without realizing. What if one davened, one prayed, or said a Kriya Shema, or said a Bracha, and afterwards one found that the area was soiled, there was dung, there was feces in the corner? What about that? Well, how was one's prayer sufficient? Was it all right? The answer is, it depends. If there was reasonable doubt in the first place that there could have been this room was soiled, then one has to repeat one's Amida and one's Kriya Shema. One does not repeat brachas. But if there's no reason to suspect anything, meaning to say there's no children walking around, there's no people who may do this without telling anyone, then there was no reason to suspect this, and nothing needs to be repeated as well. This is considered an honest a matter beyond one's control. What about urine? So if there was reasonable doubt, one does not need to repeat even the Amida as well, even in the case of a reasonable doubt. It's less stringent than the case of feces. What about passing air in general? What happens if somebody passes air in the vicinity and one is in the middle of praying? So from oneself or one's friend, one must wait silently until the smell dissipates. So if one's in the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei and one hears or smells that someone has passed air, one has to wait until that smell goes away. What about during learning of Torah? So if one passes air, one needs to wait. But if it's somebody else, one does not need to wait as well. And this obviously is relating to the stringency with which one reviews oneself and one's learning of Torah. With this, we're going to conclude the first part of Simon Hay on the halachas of clean and unclean places.